Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Halloween Horror Nights podcast. This is a little bit different this time. We've got a very special guest. We've got Ryan from Theme Park Loopy. He's been over to Halloween Horror Nights, and we're just going to get his general chat of his horror experience for this year. So, Ryan, welcome. How are you doing, my friend?
Thank you. I'm doing really good. Are you doing okay?
I'm not too bad. Bit of a stressful day because if you don't know, I like to put my personal life on here. I've been working today in on the trains and everything's gone the wrong way. Part of the actual rail collapse on one of the main lines through the Trentpennine, so it's also caused absolute pandemonium. But other than that, I'm okay. So
Yeah,
it's one of those things.
I'm glad I don't have to do the Trans-Pennine experience that often anymore. That was always fun.
Yeah, it's just if you know the area, there was a part of a wall collapse near Dewsbury, so it's just caused a massive lot of backlog. Anyway, you're not here to talk about trains, and you're not here to talk about my life experiences today. We're here to
Oh,
talk about
Dewsbury.
we're here to talk about Halloween Horror Nights and some scare experiences. So I do believe you went to Halloween Horror Nights this year.
Yeah, so we went out in the middle of September. We were there for a couple of weeks, and we stayed at Universal. So we did the Rush of Fear ticket. We were just at the back end of that. So there were 5 nights while we were there that we could use. We used them for 4 nights, and it was interesting. The first night was a complete washout. Not sure if Phil went that night or not, but he was definitely there
That was
on that
probably
night.
that was probably the second weekend,
Yeah,
after I
yeah.
after Phil's trip, because I was there for the first weekend, and then
Right.
I weren't there for the weekend after. So, did you have any expectations for this year? I.e., with the houses being announced, did you have any like massive houses that were on top of your hype list, or?
Well, I mean, for me, I was probably looking forward most to the Stranger Things house. Dueling Dragons, very interested in. It was one that I didn't have high expectations for, but I thought for the whole fact of it being Dueling Dragons, I thought this is quite a unique thing that I'm looking forward to. Some of them I didn't really know what to expect. I'm not much of a video game person, so I wasn't familiar with The Last of Us, but my wife was, so that was the one. Also, I've not been massively into Chucky. I remember my brother watching it a lot when I was younger, but it was never a big thing for me. But what was quite funny about Chucky is that when we stayed at Cabana Bay, and when we went back to our hotel one day when it was raining, they had every Chucky film on back to back. So
Nice.
I feel like I've now
You've
learnt
been
the ways of Chucky
you've been
now.
christened by Chucky and Tiff.
Yeah, I was slightly scared about the spawn of Chucky. Is that what we call
The
it?
seed of Chucky,
Seed of Chucky, that's it. Yeah.
with the son that then splits into two characters later on in the film. So yeah.
Yeah, and but also his accent as well, it terrified me. It's like, "Oh, father, what
Yeah,
am I?"
it's like a hybrid of a British accent on steroids. So yeah, I understand what you're
Yes.
saying. So just to go back a little bit. So you do have experience going to Universal before this actual trip, I take it.
Yes, I've been a couple of times. This is my wife's third time.
Nice.
Last time we went, we stayed on Universal. It's not Universal. We stayed on International Drive last time. We didn't mind it on International Drive, and it wasn't. It was pretty cheap in the end, actually, was that we went with Virgin last time. But I kind of, in the end, decided that I felt that I wanted to be in a bit of a bubble. I felt a little bit out of it because it was a bit like, so you'd come back from Disney or you'd come back from Universal, and then it was always a bit of a deflation. You felt a bit deflated, going to an International Drive hotel
Yeah,
afterwards a little bit.
it's like the adrenaline of the theme park, and then you're having to travel back to your hotel to try and relax. I've done that before.
So this time we were looking at Universe. Well, so we actually booked to go in 2020, but they were, the times that we don't talk about the event. So because of the event, then we couldn't go. So we'd actually booked to go to Coronado Springs. I think it is at Coronado Springs.
Yeah, Orbit Disney.
Yeah, and so we'd booked there, everything, and then obviously it all got cancelled and we couldn't do it. So in the end, we thought there'd been a bit of negativity around Disney after, you know, the event, and people were saying, oh, you don't get this anymore. And they got rid of the big one for me was when they got rid of the Magical Express. And I thought, that is just, it's a mean thing to do. I mean, it can't cost, I mean, to not transport people from the airport, it's like, oh, just make your own way here and then come and spend your £10,000 at Disney. I thought it was very presumptuous. And I think that was the one that upset me the most, even though, you know, you could get a transfer for like whatever, you know, $50 or something. I just thought, if I'm going to Coronado and I'm spending, it was going to cost like something like $7,000. And wow. I'm thinking, and you're not gonna pick us up from the airport. Like you're gonna cut that out of it. And I just thought, do you know what? I'll go and stay at Universal instead. So we looked at some Universal hotels. We did weigh up staying at the more. I don't know how they refer to them, but the more.
Yeah, you've got the
one.
Premium, prime value, and that's where it's. So you've got like the prime value are your Endless Summer. And Dockside. Then you've got your Prime, which is your Kennebana Bays, your Aventura. Then you've got your Preferred, which is your Sapphire Falls, kind of on its own. And then you've got your Premier Hotels, which is the Hard Rock, Royal Pacific, and Portofino Bay.
Yeah, so we looked at, I quite like to stay at Portofino or the Hard Rock. And I was thinking, well, sometimes it can be worth it for the fast passes, you know, because the fast passes, you could be paying $160 or whatever, you know, for a fast pass sometimes. But because I was thinking, well, we're going in September, in theory, it's going to be a little bit quieter. In the end, I started looking at Aventura, Sapphire and Cabana. Now, I think we discounted Sapphire because it's a bit of a conference center hotel, which sounds a bit stupid because I booked Coronado, which is the conference center hotel for Disney. However, so we discounted that. So it was then between Aventura and Cabana. And in the end, what kind of swung it is that last time the mistake that we made was that we didn't have enough rest days. And it kind of really hurt us in the end when we got to like day 10 and we'd been going park, 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 park. And we were absolutely off our feet. So I thought Cabana Bay, a bit more of a resort, got a lazy river right on the edge of Volcano Bay. That's an option. And it just seemed like, and we were only going as a couple, not as a family. So maybe it's a bit weird, a couple going to a more family resort, but I wanted to feel like I was in a resort, you know, like a good sized resort. That's what we wanted, with a couple of pools, a couple of different bars. And we wanted to be able to just relax and have those relaxing days. So it worked out really well in the end. But I did go over to Aventura and Sapphire just to take a look. We went to the restaurant / bar, which I always get wrong. It's called Strongwater Tavern at Sapphire. We went there.
Yeah, Strongwater Tavern is the bar, and Anatista Cookhouse is the restaurant in the basement.
Right,
at Sapphire Falls.
And at Strongwater Tavern, they do like Caribbean type food. So they do like it's meant to be small plates, but typically it's America. So they're actually just normal sized plates, actually. And you could get like stuff from Jamaica or wherever. And so we got a few plates there. That were really nice. That was one of the best meals that we had. Then after we left there, let's go to Aventura. We went up to the rooftop bar.
Yeah.
However, we had a couple of drinks up there, and then we were in the middle of a lightning storm at the top of Aventura.
Ooh, yeah.
And that was a really fun experience. The barman said to me, he goes, do you know what? I've never been up here when it's rained before. And I says, well, I think it's going to rain in a minute because there's a massive dark cloud over there.
Yeah.
What I didn't realize is, after going up to the top of Aventura, is that Epic Universe is actually closer than what I thought.
Yeah. If you drive down International Drive or Universal Boulevard, which is the easiest route to get to Epic Universe, it does feel like a bit of a trek. But obviously when you're high up and you look over, you think, it's not that far. It's a bit like the Star Flyer. The Star Flyer looks like it's right at the bottom of International Drive. It's actually only a little bit, it's only halfway down. Because I think people forget that International Drive is actually a lot longer than that little tiny section near SeaWorld and then Icon Park. It goes all the way down to more or less to Disney itself. So it is a long road. There's a lot more development down there. But are you looking forward to Epic Universe?
Yeah, definitely. We were weighing up a trip. So we're trying to weigh up what we're going to do in 2025. We're not planning to do a major in 2024, but we are going to do something bigger in 2025. So one of the options was I was looking at potentially going to Dollywood and a few places and maybe starting at Epic Universe. However, another option was to go to California. But then we've in the end decided that we're actually going to go to Japan. So we're going to do Japan.
Lovely.
And we're going to fly into Osaka, do Universal and some other bits and bobs, do the new studio, well, it's not new Ghibli sort of park thing they've got there now. A few other things, probably go to Fuji Q. And then we're going to go to Tokyo and obviously do Disney Sea and Disneyland Park up there. So
that was mine and Julie's plan for this year, actually 2023. There's a special reason as well. Both people on here know, I don't know if you know. But I was celebrating a big birthday this year. I was hitting the big 4-0.
Oh, really?
And it happened to coincide with Tokyo. Japan's 40th birthday. The park actually opened the day I was born in Japan, so I was hoping to get over there for it. Wow. But obviously, COVID put a lot of dampers on that, and like I say, they didn't really open up to tourists till very late 2022, I think.
Yeah, and
even into 2023 was for some people with visas. So I kind of put all that on the back burner. I might go for my 50th. I don't know yet.
Oh, you could maybe you could join us in 25, maybe do a group trip, perhaps.
Yeah, well, we've already got things booked for Florida next year already. I've got a few friends going over for the first time for a while, so we're doing. I think me and Julie are doing a split stay. We're going to do 7 days at Disney, and 8 days at Universal.
I'm interested in that. So like, what is the best way of doing a split stay? Because I'm a bit of a paranoid. So I like to book package holidays so that I know I've got that protection there. However, it's kind of impossible to book a package holiday, which is also a split stay. So what is the best way of doing it?
As far as I know, Virgin still allow you to do split stays, but you need to go into a shop really, rather than trying to do it online. So I don't know where you are in the UK, but like I say, at the Trapper Centre, there's a Virgin shop, which I can go to in Manchester. I think there's a few others. I think there's one in Birmingham.
So what I've been told about Virgin, though, if you do that, is that they, and Tui do this as well, is that they will do that, but they act as a booking agent, not as your travel agent.
Yeah,
which means that it kind of doesn't give it as much protection, I guess.
It's still protected because it's still under the Virgin banner and it's still at all protected. So if something does go wrong, the only problem is when you do split stays, there's not actually like a rep, which to be honest, most holiday companies don't have reps anymore, but it's more contacted through the app. But the thing is with a split stay, it depends on what you're actually after. It's like saying, I don't mind doing DIY to Florida. I've been going since 2008 and I've done packages, I've done split stays, I've done everything DIY. And it's having the confidence of knowing who to book with. So, example, this year, for next year, I've booked my flights with British Airways. I'm actually going to be flying from Gatwick rather than Manchester because it's just a lot cheaper. The staying at Disney, I'm going to try something new that I haven't tried. So it's a bit of a risk, but I've looked into it. I've looked at the reviews. I've looked at people using it. And it's going to be one of the DVC points things, you know, where you rent them off somebody else. And it's this company that actually do them. They've been doing it for 27 years. So I'm quite confident that that'll work fine. And then the last bit, I've actually booked direct with Universal, which I usually do.
And where are you going to stay? Where are you going to stay at Universal?
I'm going to stay at Aventura in the two queen room because they have the views at the top. They're usually the top three floors. Right. And there's a certain room we went to. I think I can't remember the exact number, but the one we had last year, it had full view Universal. Because what it is, it's like if you look at the top of Aventura, you see where you see all the windows. These,
Yeah.
with them Queen ones, you have like six or seven windows all the way along, and they're
All
all
right.
floor to ceiling windows, so you get views of everything.
Yeah,
It's
I
great.
think.
It's great for couple. I always recommend Aventura for couples. For families, I would say Cabana Bay or Endless Summer because of the
Yeah.
suites. But if you're just a couple, Aventura is perfect in my personal eyes. But
So I think we've said that next time, just because we want to try somewhere different, it's going to be a toss-up, probably between Aventura and Sapphire. I think I'm leaning towards Aventura because I quite like the idea of having the views, and also not a lot of people know this, but you can pool hop at Universal anyway, so it kind of don't make a
yes.
difference when it comes to the pools
You can the there is a slight little clause with the Universal pool hop. You can pool hop in the main six, like
Yeah,
Cabana
not from
Bay,
Dockside and
Aventura,
Surfside,
Sapphire
yeah.
Falls, and the main three. But if you're at Endless Summer,
Yeah.
you can't hop into them pools.
No, you
So and
can't.
so it's obviously it's vice versa. So if you're staying at Aventura, you can't go to Endless Summer pools. The keys don't work. It's but that's just one of the things. Anyway, I think we obviously know about our trips for a bit. So let's get back to Halloween Horror Nights.
Yes.
First question, did it meet or did it disappoint your expectations that you had on the event? Because have you been to Halloween Horror Nights before? Obviously, I think you have, haven't you?
No, I've not
No.
done Halloween
All
Horror
right.
Nights before.
This is,
No,
oh, so you're a newbie.
so we went at Christmas last time, and
Oh,
I think
goodness.
we'll. So yeah, so we've done the full spectrum now. But okay. So I think, in some ways, it exceeded my expectations because it's, I think Universal Studios overall is my favorite park because it's so immersive in terms of its theming and so clear. In the different areas it has, and obviously it's got Diagon Alley, which is great. So in that over, so I would say that overall atmosphere exceeded my expectations because if you go somewhere like Alton Towers, for example, they've got a few pumpkins around, but it's, for the last few years of going to Scarefest, it hasn't felt very cohesive. It's felt like there's a few bits here and there, and it's just not felt like a cohesive thing. So in terms of the overall event, that exceeded my expectations. What disappointed me is that it became very clear to me that they've oversold the event massively. There was far too many people in there, and I don't know what they're thinking, but I mean, I guess if you stayed until 1 or 2 in the morning, then the crowds would get lighter. But for us, we had a busy schedule. We weren't going to be staying there till 1 o'clock in the morning. We did the Stay and Scream, that was good. So that was well worth doing. But by the time it got to about 8 o'clock, on a couple of the days, it just got so hectic that I just thought I can't actually be bothered being here anymore because there were just crowds, crowds, crowds. And one of the nights there was like loads and loads of tour groups going in, and it was like hundreds and hundreds pouring in, pouring in. And I thought, how can this park take any more people because it's already rammed in there? So I didn't enjoy that. The houses, I thought there were, I've got, I do have a kind of order of the ones that I preferred. I guess as to be expected, that the houses, they have the big sound stages, don't you know, which other theme parks in general don't have sound stages that they can put things in. However, ironically, I would say that my two favorite houses were not in sound stages. They were in smaller sort of tent-like kind of venues. I said earlier I was looking forward to Stranger Things, but in the end, I think that actually was our bottom maze in the end, and not because it was particularly terrible. I think what it was is that we'd watched the series. The house was literally a recreation of the series, which I think is a lazy way of doing a maze, in my opinion.
Universal do have a habit when they're doing a instant an IP. It usually is, especially with something that big like Stranger Things, it's usually scene for scene for scene through the season. They don't get free rein. When they do get free rein on an IP, it works. They do it fantastic. When they did Poltergeist a few years ago, you as if you was walking through the film at the beginning, and then you went into the other realm, and Universal went their own way with how you were in that realm. So you had the giant white ghost and the clowns and all these different things happening that you weren't expecting, because obviously it's their own interpretation of what's inside that realm, because in the film you don't get to see it. And that's when Universal do things really well, is when they do that. When they're doing it scene for scene for scene, it seems to just drop a little bit for me.
Yeah, and it wasn't worth, you know, waiting an hour or so for, which is probably what we did in the end, because we did stay in Scream, but that was the first night that we did stay in Scream. Yeah. We weren't entirely sure what we were doing, and we got into the stay in Scream area a little bit later than what we should have done. So we still ended up waiting like an hour. So that was disappointing. So my favourite ones were, well, my top one for sure.
I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll go through you. If you've got a top three, we'll just do your top three. So top start three. With third, second, and then first. So build the anticipation a little bit.
Okay. Okay. Right. So third, I think I've said that that's probably going to be Universal Monsters. Okay. And I know that that's not a popular choice, but the reason why I picked that one is because I think it had the best effect, which was the Hunchback of Notre Dame leaping from the tower on that bungee cord.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really good effect. And I really enjoyed the Invisible Man scene. I thought that was really well done. I listened to your last episode, and I know that there was a problem with wheelchair access in there, which doesn't surprise me in a way, because I know that the floor did seem kind of uneven in there. So that's a bit of a shame. But for me, probably my third favourite was Universal Monsters. I did enjoy that. The only thing I didn't enjoy is leaving The Last of Us, which was literally next door to it, and then having to walk about 10 miles around to then go into it.
Unfortunately, with the construction as well going on in the kids' zone, it has caused a bit of an issue for a couple of years. Hopefully, when the new kids' zones reopened and it's all done to, I think, is it DreamWorks? There may be some more routing issues, a bit of quick routing issues. You don't have to walk all the way around ET for 5,000 miles to do them houses. It's a bit of a shame. But like I say, you are, when you go backstage, at least you're not, the queues are not inside the park, which does free up a little bit of space. But also, when you're using the backstage, that's where you've officially made your capacity bigger.
So, what's kind of interesting is the last time that we went, we did actually get to go backstage, but we were warned, you know, don't take pictures and blah blah blah. But this time you could take pictures because it was part of the queue line.
Yeah, it's a bit. Yeah, did you do the VIP experience? Then I take it or something like that.
No. So what happened is we got picked to do the Macy's Day Parade. We piloted one of the balloons, so we got taken into a big warehouse and trained on how to
hold a rope
and then how to jiggle the we had the big gnome, right. I can't remember what it's called, and so that was interesting. I don't know how we ended up getting picked for. Also, we were the family of the day for one of the days. We actually opened the park, Universal Studios. So we had like weird, last time we went, we seemed to get picked for things for some weird reason. But my second favorite was Dr. Oddfellows, Twisted Origins. I know. So I listened, and on the last episode, Phil was saying he didn't like that because it was just like a normal kind of clown maze type thing. But I think what I enjoyed about it, I think why I enjoyed it is because all the other ones, or most of the other ones, were on these big sound stages, and it felt really intimate, and it felt like you were actually walking through some sort of mad clown show. And the scene where you walked past the makeup table and everything, and it just kind of felt really real. And I think that's what I enjoyed about it. Okay, and then our favourite one was the one that was next door to that, which was the Darkest Deal. I think I read something that someone said that it was their least favourite, which I can't understand, because
it was mine. I had to have it at the bottom because Well, mainly because I missed the opening scene. You know, where he's reading out how he's making the deal. And then when I'm going through the house, I'm not seeing anything. That's the only, that's a disadvantage to the conga line that Universal do. If you mistime it by maybe even 3-4 seconds, you can be thrown straight out of it. And that's what happened with me, because I found I knew what was happening, because obviously we do this podcast and we know the itinerary and what it all is. So I knew what was happening, but I could see that Julie wasn't figuring out what was going on.
Yeah, so my trick with the conga line is to slow down and let the group ahead move forward.
Yeah. We do all them tricks, but sometimes it's just impossible with the volume of people that we're going through. So
that's unfortunately,
it's like saying with Halloween Horror Nights, you need multiple viewings of the houses if you possibly can. Whereas what I found in the UK, because you 9 times out of 10, you actually get pulsed through the houses and the mazes. You seem to get all the scares all the time. So that's why I'm more leaning towards the UK haunts at the moment rather than Halloween Horror Nights. But that's just my personal opinion at the moment.
So, I mean, yeah. So my overall feel of Halloween Horror Nights, and I did try quite a bit of the food as well. So that was interesting. Yeah. That weird hot dog was interesting. Did you try that?
Unfortunately, we've just done the food one with John Self, one of the regular food critics who comes on. I personally didn't have a chance to eat any of the Halloween Horror Nights food. I mainly just was house, drink, sit down because I was sick of the heat and the people, and then more drink and house if possible. And like I said, I only managed to get two houses done, and I only managed to get two houses done on the one house on the Saturday night because we left because we felt uncomfortable because it was that busy. And then I managed to get the other seven done on Sunday night with the after 11 o'clock express pass.
Yeah. I mean, that's a shame. I mean, I don't think the actual effect of the contract actually worked past the media night, where it was meant the signature was meant to look like it was being signed. That wasn't working. But it was quite good. He goes, the deal is done. And then you kind of walk through it. But no, we really enjoyed that one. So that was definitely our top three. But like you say, though, it can be that you might have had a good run through, you might have had a bad run through, and you know, it's always different. So people have different opinions, don't they?
Yeah, they do. So we won't bash a bit too much, but did you say what your least house was? Your least favourite house?
So
was
I think
Stranger Things or was it another one?
So I think it was a toss-up between Stranger Things and The Last of Us, and mainly because they just felt too procedural. I like going, you know, I'll tell you about another event that we've been to this year, which in comparison, I think the best kind of scare maze is kind of feel chaotic and you're not really sure what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But if you're walking through and you're going, oh, this is a scene where that happens, we're now going to walk into the scene where that happens, it's a bit like, well, what's the point? So I like Stranger Things was, the only thing that was really scary about it is that they just had random demigorgons just popping out every now and then. But it was like, oh, this is the scene where Eddie does the thing. Oh, this is a scene where that happens. And it was a bit like, well, what's the point? So I didn't enjoy that. So Last of Us, they were too procedural. I think they need to either not do IPs or do them well. I think our third least favourite was Chucky, unfortunately, just mainly because I didn't like the fact that it was like it ended in the middle and then started again, and it didn't make any sense. It was just pointless because it was, you know, you went in and they did the kind of Child's Play bit, or was it, I can't remember what order they did it in, but one bit you went into it was all about the TV show and the kills in the TV show, and the other bit it was more like Child's Play and various sizes of Chucky. The animatronics, like they had like animatronic kind of little Chuckies and stuff, and they had a big Chucky, didn't they, like a guy dressed in a big Chucky, and that was
that threw Phil right off when they had the people dressed as Chucky. I think it was like supposedly the way of that these people were trying to be Chucky and trying to emulate what he's done, and he's like their followers. And I can see where Phil didn't see it and didn't see how it worked. But I just fell in love with that animatronic as soon as we walked in.
Yeah, that was cool. We did enjoy that. And to be honest, we liked the, you know, they had like a bit of a video bit when you were queuing up. And that was pretty funny.
Yeah, it's quite quite personal as well. He actually had a few stabs at Universal in that, if you pun intended.
Yeah, because I think there was a stab about, I'm sure there was something about in fact nobody being in the queue for Fast and Furious anyway or something like that. I can't remember.
Yeah, I think he said, oh, this is the most this queue's ever seen.
Something like that.
So, all right, no problem. Well, what we'll do now, we'll just take a quick mini break and won't make any difference to you guys listening. It'll literally just be a split second like that. So, join us on the other side. And just like that, we are back for part two. We're still here. Ryan's still here. So, let's move on to a couple of UK haunts that you said you've done this year. So, do you want to just let the listeners know what you've been to in the UK?
Yeah, well, not done loads this year because we're mainly out in Florida, but we went out to Doncaster Fear Factory at the beginning of October. And we also did the Leeds Scare Trail as well, which is an event sort of local to us in the Leeds area, which is like a bit of a charity event. So that was kind of interesting and sort of genuinely quite a long walk as well in the woods.
Oh, okay.
But Doncaster Fear Factory is one that it's been going for a while now. I think it's in its fourth or fifth year. Okay. And I think this year it's definitely been getting a lot of attention, I would say, from what I've been seeing. We were there on the media night, we did an episode there. I don't know how well it came out in the end. We recorded going through the mazes. So if anyone's interested in what happens in a scare maze, or at least what happens in the scare maze at Doncaster Fear Factory, you can listen to that. But it is mainly just us going, there's a clown.
Yeah.
But what was quite striking in comparison to HHN was, I think the thing is with HHN is that if you're walking through, the actors, a lot of them, they'll have like a button that they press and then it'll have a light or it'll generate some speech or something, and they kind of pop out and then they'll move to another station and they'll kind of pop out. There are some kind of more roving sort of characters, but not really. Whereas at places in the UK like Doncaster Fear Factory, the actors are kind of genuinely intense in the way that they interact with you, which they just wouldn't do at HHN, I don't think. Mm-hmm. The other big difference is that they actually touch you as well, which I don't think they dare. I don't know if they dare do at HHN anymore.
No, it's definitely that's the biggest thing with the US because of the the suing culture. It's one thing that they definitely don't do. They don't do any form of touching. I think they did it when they did the repository, which was a separate ticketed attraction of 2016, I think.
I can remember that.
It's like a VR kind of thing, and they obviously you're blindfolded in your VR. They did guide you through things, so you had to sign a waiver to be saying that someone was touching you. But can you imagine if everyone had to sign a waiver at Halloween Horror Nights? I don't think you'd get through the park entrance for 5 hours.
Probably not. But yeah, they had some genuinely intense attractions at Doncaster Fear Factory. So this year they had. So they have one that's called Yana Gate, and I think it was its last year this year, and that was kind of like a zombie maze type thing, and it had a very smoky kind of maze at the end with chainsaw wielding zombies at the end, and that was pretty cool because it kind of gradually crescendoed into quite an intense moment. They had so they've got one called the Chasm, which is they've got like an effect where you kind of crawl. It's like they've got a lot of crawl spaces, and then it's like an effect like you're in a lift and you're going into like an underground kind of area that's made to be very claustrophobic, a lot of very heavy cloths and things like that to make you feel very, very enclosed in, that you've got to kind of genuinely fight your way through to kind of get out of.
So did they have like airbags in it? Or was it just like heavy cloth rather than being actually filled with air and stuff? You know, you had to literally push your way through.
You had to really push your way. There was an area where it was kind of, it was like a bit of a squeeze. It was like, started off okay and it kind of got tighter and tighter as you went through. That was good. We didn't have a great run through on the chasm though, I don't think. I think it was a little bit disjointed for me. That was probably our least favourite one, was the chasm, but it had a lot of good reviews this year, so it just makes me wonder if we didn't have the best run through. There was a new one for this year, which was I think they call it Diablis, I think, Keeper of Secrets, which was basically it's really cool actually. The beginning, you kind of went in, you were met by like a kind of creepy priest, and then you were asked to go into these confession booths, and you were asked to confess to something in these confession booths. And then when you left the confession booth and you did your confession, you were then met by these kind of creepy nuns who then, I won't actually give away what actually happens, but basically it's one of those where you're incredibly, disorientated. There was a lot of touching in that one, for sure. There's a lot of touching. That one very much relied on touching and talking to you. Very, very ASMR, I would say.
Yeah, so they were kind of like right near your ears and talking into you, like whispering in your ears rather than blatantly just jumping out and trying to scare you. It was more trying to get into your psyche a little bit rather than the jump scares.
So they'd get really close to you, and but although I did have quite a funny moment, because I you get kind of isolated in that one, and I was in front and I went quite far ahead, and I suddenly just heard this, "Wait there, your friends are very slow." And I was like, "Oh, okay." But that also had a really, really good ending as well. Like, if you listen to the recording, you can hear me. I just go, "Oh my god!" right at the end, and it had a really, really good ending. So that was interesting. That one has had mixed reviews. So our friends at Scare Directory wrote a review. I'm not heard Scare Tracks yet of that one, but I did speak to Mikey about it, and he was of similar kind of views, where it's one of those where I think, so it's new for this year, I think though they maybe want to think about some tweaks and changes, which I think would make it a bit more effective, but they're definitely on the right track with it. I would say it was definitely, it was the beginning and the end was really, really good. I think the middle section maybe just needs a little bit of work, but it was still really good and a kind of new experience, I would say. Well, if you're kind of familiar with that type of attraction, it's kind of familiar, but it's different, I guess, to what
a little bit different than what it's the basic jump scares where they just jump in your face and try.
And it's not something you would see. You wouldn't see that type of attraction at Scarefest, for example. I don't think you might have done in the past, but probably not now.
Would you say it was a bit more intense than what Scarefest would be?
So the first maze that we went into, and probably our favourite, was called Pogo's House, I think it was. The Pogo Club, it was called. The Pogo Club, which kind of gives it away as going to be clown related. I found that in the past, when I was at university, I used to work in like bars, like sticky floors, you know, things like that. Very familiar. And basically you enter into the Pogo Club, and you kind of enter into this like nightclub. It just reminded me of probably bars that I've been in Bradford or Leeds, you know, where you kind of stuck to the floor and the smell of snake bite, you know.
Yeah, I think we've all got a club like that. The local one to me, for anyone who's listening, is called, used to be called Chuffers. Very well known in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And then Pleasure Island was the other big one as well. They had
Pleasure
the
Island.
stickiest floors in the world, I believe.
Yeah, so you kind of got greeted by a guy and he's like, oh, you know, there was a club owner. You've probably heard about the club owner that was killing people, but that's not true. Don't worry about that. But come on, let's have some shots and blah blah. And then it all went dark, and then there were some jump scares in the dark, and it was really effective. Then suddenly someone turns up and they go, right, what are you all doing here? Come this way. Come on, we've got to get out of here, blah, blah, blah. So they kind of get you up. And then like the confession booths, they put you into these toilet cubicles. They're like, hide in the toilet cubicles. And we're like, so we get in these toilet cubicles. And then they have some, you know, some arms reaching in and things like that. Then all of a sudden, the back of the toilet cubicle, the doors just kind of like slam open. I'm like, what do we do now?
Do I walk through or do I stay here? Yeah.
Yeah. And it was just absolutely bonkers. Like the music, it was like, I don't know if you've ever been familiar with, like, well, actually, literally, if you've ever listened to a bonkers compilation, it's like literally like that kind of music. And it was mad. It was completely mad. We did a couple of bits of video because I let us film. Yeah. So we did a few bits I put on Instagram, but it was just completely mad and really intense as well. And they got really close to you. And that was really good. And then the other house was Crackle Hill, which was a bit like a kind of hillbilly kind of house that you kind of went through, and there were sort of various scenes. I think I put up a video from that where that you went into. So one of the scenes that you went into, it was the story was all about the house. The house had been burnt down, and they were like, "Did you burn my house down?" And all this kind of stuff going on. And one of the scenes was right, get out of here, go through the fireplace, burn like that. And you had to go under this fireplace. And then you went into this dining room, and this woman turns up, and then she's got this spoon, and she's like, eat it, eat it. And we're like, oh my God.
Was there anything actually on the spoon?
There was nothing on the spoon, no. Thankfully.
I know Mike has done a few of them before where they actually do force down your throat. So.
Yeah, and I wonder if, I mean, they've not gone down that road, but some places will do that where they'll get you to eat things. But it's so Doncaster Fear Factory, while it's not a conga line attraction, it'll be more like it is at places like Scarefest where they kind of batch you into groups.
Yeah.
I'd have been interested to have gone on a normal night, because the way they were batching us is in our groups, and there was only... I can't remember how many attended the media event. It was very well attended, but there can't have been more than sort of 400, something like that.
Yeah, so if you're in like a little group of maybe seven or eight, you're all going to get the same interactions, aren't you, rather than being a massive big conga line.
But it was really good and really intense, and it just kind of it kind of allowed me to put Halloween Horror Nights into a bit more context, because I kind of realised that while Halloween Horror Nights has the bells and whistles and the bigger budget, they don't necessarily have the bigger scares, because, you know, it's more intimate, and it felt a little bit, well, I don't want to say it felt more DIY, because I don't think that's the right thing to say, but if you know what I mean, Doncaster Fear Factory at a film studio, you know.
Yeah, so. they haven't got the budget, but they've done the best they possibly can. And instead of actually going for huge sets and spending loads of money on the sets, they've actually gone for the actual scare factor to try and make it where you get your adrenaline running. Because that's what I found at Halloween Horror Nights this year. I found my adrenaline was building up more going into the house. And then when I was in the house, I was dropping quite quickly.
Yeah.
With the UK haunts, it's literally walking into a house or into an area and they literally be bombarded. So your adrenaline's always pumping.
Yeah. And I was just surprised how, like, every single actor was so committed to what they were doing, and they were so determined to, you know, I don't know how they do it, like, all night, you know, because some of them are shouting at you, and I don't know. I mean, I've done a bit of acting and stuff in the past, I couldn't imagine doing that for hours, you know.
Yeah, it's because it's like some of these UK events now are actually running for quite a long time. And prime example, Skur City, they started in end of September and they're still running to this weekend.
Yeah.
So there is, it's a good over a month and a half. We're like Halloween Horror Nights is nearly 2 months, which potentially is going to be going into August next year. So them events are longer and more, and the budget's there for them to actually employ these type of people. But the UK haunts don't seem to have that massive amount of budget. So they're obviously a shorter time, but when people are employed, they're doing it for passion, I would say, more than the money.
I don't know if you're familiar, but you know, Brett, who's one of our presenters, he why he's not off and on in sort of September, October, is he runs a couple of things. He's got he co-runs My Haunted Hotel, which is in Chester. Yeah. And also he runs and designs along with Ollie, his business partner. They run Terra Mountain, which is has had a lot of really good press, especially over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
So he you know, he understands sort of more than most about how to make the most out of what little you have. And it often comes down to, and Brett has said this before, that if you want to make money, then you don't do scare attractions because there's not a lot of money to be made in it, I guess. I guess it depends on the situation. Like Terra Mountain, for example, and I guess the same with Doncaster Fear Factory, because they're on, I think it's Fawnhurst Manor, which is its own thing. It's like a bar, restaurant, you know, kind of place. So somewhere like that, like Terra Mountain, which is the Silver Mountain Experience, for them, it's part of the way that they can extend their season. So there is a lot of that makes sense. A lot of these attractions are where they'll sort of rent an area somewhere, like a couple of fields, and they'll sort of erect tents and stuff like that. You know, they do such an amazing job, but I sometimes think you have to be doing it for the passion and the scares, because there must be so much risk and overheads to do that. And you know, when you do these things, and obviously you have to start planning very early in the year. You're almost planning in November, aren't you, for the year after. There's no guarantee that people are going to turn up, you know, and it must be kind of scary in a way to think, look, I really want to do this attraction, but are people going to come?
Because you see, you've got the big boys, what I call the big boys in the UK at the moment. You've got Skurfest at Alton Towers. You've got Tully's Shocktoberfest. You've got Thorpe Park Fright Nights. You've got the Extreme Screen Park. I think that is it. Is that Malton, I think? So you've got some of the big boys out there, but then you've got the smaller ones, like Skur City Experience have just started up a few years ago. You've got Fear Factory. They moved locations quite a couple of times. They now moved to Preston. You've got some big boys like the York Maze, but they're not known for the Halloween events.
But Psychopath this year has got a lot of good press as well.
Yeah, so I had a quick look through Skur Directory's actual inventory the other week, and of how many haunts you have in the UK. Because I said to Phil, oh, we'll just do a rundown. I said, it'll just be me talking for about 35 minutes of every event in the UK. There is hundreds, if you look at it as a broad picture.
Yeah.
And people don't realise that the UK haunt scene is getting quite big.
Yeah, yeah. Well, on our podcast, we'll start talking about Halloween in May. Because otherwise you have to spread it out all year. Otherwise, you know, if you leave it to September, then like you say, you will be just listing off every single event. But you know, so it's kind of interesting. I've kind of done the whole spectrum this year. So I've done the big budget Halloween Horror Nights, then Doncaster Fear Factory, which is obviously a big one in the UK, but I guess not in comparison to Halloween Horror Nights. And then we did the Leeds Scare Trail, which is very much you know, definitely, you know, a local event, which is run by, you know, scouts and other volunteers.
Right, nice.
And that was at Golden Acre Park in Leeds. The guy that runs it, I think he's called Stuart Kite. He runs also North Allerton. I can't remember what it's called, North Allerton. But they have Scare Maidens up in North Allerton. Mm-hmm. I think that's also for charity, but it's a bit more of a maze. It's like a maze type event. Is that one? Mm-hmm. But what Leeds Scare Trail is, it's kind of interesting. You kind of walk through a park, Golden Acre Park, and you're walking through the woods, and you're literally walking through the woods, and people, there's different groups of actors who are just kind of camped out in different areas, and they all kind of do, you know, they all kind of group together to do like their own thing. And it's just kind of an interesting experience. And it, I think I mentioned earlier, it was genuinely a long walk. It took us like 45 minutes to walk through the whole thing.
Well, and when the people were together, were there like little scenes and they were acting out
scenarios
and stuff? So were they actually props and stuff as well? Or was it just the scare actors itself?
So they had a few props, but because you're literally in a wood and there's not a lot of lighting, they made use of campfires. So they made use of campfires. They did have bits of audio, you know.
For people listening, would you say it's more like a bit like one of the hay rides that the farms do, but without the ride bit? So you're walking it rather than it being a hay ride where you sit on the back of a tractor and drive around.
Yeah, I'd say it's comparable to something like that. But yeah, you are walking rather than... you see, I guess the difference is... The problem is in the UK is that, you know, when you get to October, it generally gets wet.
Yeah.
So these kind of scare trails, especially to woodland, do kind of become a bit of an endurance challenge in their own right sometimes because there's a few parts in the park where you have to kind of go across grass or something. And if you get like 1,000 people to walk across a patch of grass, well, it'll turn into a mud bath in no time at all.
Yeah, so. It does. No, that's a nice little broad spectrum of what you've done this year. So, is there anything else you can think of that you'd like to pass on to the listeners? Or?
Well, I mean, I guess it's a bit of a funny one. Like we had a very quiet 2022 on the podcast. I think we only did something like 6 episodes in the end, including the festive special. So it went very quiet on the podcast, and that's mainly been down to me having a kind of terrible last 18 to 24 months. So I had a bit of a period last year where I was kind of thinking I couldn't get myself in the right headspace to do episodes. Yeah. Sometimes it was very difficult.
It's the podcast block, we call it.
You just
feel like you're doing the same thing or you're not coming up with anything new, and it just feels like you're in a stalemate situation where you're just doing it for the sake of actually doing it rather than doing it because you want to do it.
I've always had an interest in broadcast media, and in particular radio. I was always big with, you know, when I was at university, I would listen to radio like all night when I was doing my work. So I was one of those weird people at university. I'd not do anything until about 8 o'clock at night. And then I'd suddenly decide to start working on the essay or something. Mm-hmm. And I'd work until about 5 o'clock in the morning or something. So I was very big on listening to late night radio and like, you know, talk type radio, sort of various stations and things. And that was kind of before podcasting was a thing, because that'll have been early 2000s. And I guess podcasting wasn't a thing until 2007-ish, I guess, maybe a little bit earlier, 2006.
Yeah, well, I started listening to podcasts myself round about 2000 and, what are we on now, 2012, 2013, when I started work for a very noticeable postal company. I had like 4 or 5 hours a day of free time. So that's when I found podcasts, and I just started listening to podcasts all the time. And unfortunately, at the moment, with the job I'm in now, I do get some free time. I just don't get knowing I have that free time. So a lot of the podcasts that I used to listen to, I've had to cut back on. I probably listen to maybe 30 to 40 podcasts a week at one point.
Yeah, I think the and difference then, is that I think when podcasts first became a thing, it was mainly, you know, it's like Ricky Gervais and people who were well known, and you had to have the right equipment and things like that. But I think you're right, probably around that period that you describe, around 2012, I imagine that's when people started to realize, actually, I could do this podcasting. Yeah. And the equipment, you know, because if really, if you've got a decent-ish laptop and you've got an okay-ish microphone, I guess anyone can do a podcast, can't they?
Yeah, well, so technically, you if like saying you can, if you're doing a podcast on your own, you can just do it on a mobile phone. Obviously, the audio quality is not going to be the best, but you get what you want out of it. If like, some people, like a famous one of our previous guests on here, and actually the person who got me into podcasting, Craig Lucas. He said he's one of them. Anyone can listen to anything. If you record it, somebody will be out there to actually listen to it. And this guy, even if you were just doing your life story, because that's how I got into podcasting. I started my own podcast called Simon Says, which was me just talking about my life and everything I was doing that day or that week, and then put it out there for people to listen. And it took a few, about 20 or 30 downloads a week, which is not a lot, but that's 20 or 30 people who wanted to listen to me rabbiting on about myself for 30 minutes a week.
It's about telling your story, isn't it?
Yeah, you know? But if you have a passion for something, this is a great media to bring your passion across now. Same with YouTube. YouTube is a way of bringing your passion over. That you'll find that thousands of people actually enjoy it as well.
Yeah, so, yeah, definitely. And the thing is with podcasting is, I guess if people have listened, like, so when we first started the podcast, I started it with, the way it actually started was, so back in 2020 during the event, I was really interested in live streaming for some reason. And I kind of, I'd been thinking about live streaming for ages. And then when all that kind of kicked off, I thought, actually, this is quite a good time to do live streaming.
Yeah.
So I started doing it on my own. I used OBS, and then I got a couple of people on. And then eventually that's how we all kind of met, really. I knew Dan from university, and then we had Sam come on and Brett come on, and Charlie, and then later Mikey. All kind of started by live stream. But what I kind of realized about live stream is that while I liked having that kind of live interaction, I thought it was always about people being able to listen at the time that's right for them at their own convenience, you know. So going live at 9 o'clock at night on a Friday, if you can get enough people on, then great. Mm-hmm. But I always felt like I wanted to do something that I could edit, put a little bit of creative control into, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think live streaming is really good, but I didn't get out of it what I wanted to get out of it. I wanted something a little bit more, something I could kind of get my teeth into. I wanted to do the editing, you know, and you can't really edit a live stream, really. You know, it's already happened.
Not unless you decide to have loads of transitions and different scenes on OBS, and you're switching them in and out, which ends up being a lot of work. Because I actually tried it with my darts career, because I don't know if you've listened, I do play darts quite a lot. And I was, during COVID, I was playing darts a lot. Right. And if I carried on, I have been told by a few people, if I do carry on and practice more, I potentially could get there. But it's finding the time to do it. You get what you put into it with that. And during COVID, I had plenty of time to do it. So I started getting better, and I started live streaming some of my stuff on YouTube, and I started playing online a lot, because obviously that was the only way you could play anyone at the time. And I've always played darts. I've been playing darts since I was 16. With my dad down at the pub, but I was trying to show other people that it's how easy it was to do, and eventually that just died off because obviously work got in the way, and So obviously, it was that time of year where I just never stopped with being on the postal service. It just went when I didn't have the time to do it. So, I dabbled on different things. So it's nice to actually talk to other people who are actually kind of in the same situation and tried something, and then you obviously develop into whatever it develops into. So you've developed into your podcast.
Yeah,
and this is mine and Phil's little and Joe's now.
And we started off. You know, the thing is, what I would say is, so I'm always willing to. I've had people come to me who've wanted to set up podcasts, and particularly in the same area that we're in, you know, the theme park and attraction kind of area. I'm always very keen to help people because I think that ultimately, you know, what, you know, say a rising tide rises all ships, you know, that kind of thing. I'm kind of that opinion that if there's an ecosystem there's enough room for everyone. And actually, if it's a healthy ecosystem, then everyone kind of benefits from that. But what I do see is that you've just got to do it, you know. And I'm really bad at this in that I have loads of ideas and there's loads of stuff I want to do. I really struggle to kind of then prioritize exactly what I want to do. And I kind of do a bit of everything and then I kind of end up not doing it or something. And I don't know if this is a common thing that other people do, but I have such a scatterbrain sometimes. My mind works at such a rate sometimes that I struggle to kind of pin it down. However, with the podcast, I've always been really paranoid about, like I think a lot of people are, that they get kind of paranoid about how they sound and how people are going to perceive you and what. And that was one of the biggest things when I really wanted to do a podcast, but I kept thinking, but who wants to listen to me? And my voice is rubbish anyway, and my accent's rubbish, and no one's going to listen. But in the end, and maybe because of, you know, the event and all that stuff, I kind of just thought, you know what, I need to just do it. And if people don't want to listen, then fine. And you know, so I just did it. You know, I just got some decent enough microphones, started off with my wife because she was, you know, she was willing to do it. She was there, and I couldn't work out how to talk about theme parks, you know, just by myself on a podcast.
If you did that, you'd just be rattling off company names of roller coasters and when they were built and what the stats are. And that's kind of a different form of information.
You know, so she was really gracious to kind of say, look, I'll you know, and she recognizes that, you know, I might be low on confidence sometimes, so she said, look, I'll you know, I'll do it with you for now, let's see what happens. And I put it out there, and I probably got like 5 downloads or something in the first month, you know. But I wasn't really bothered because it's not about the numbers for me. It was about just having the confidence to put something out there. And then, you know, if someone went through our back catalog, they'll see how it's, the whole thing has developed, how it has literally taken 4 years to get to a point where we're actually comfortable with what we're doing.
So you say it's evolved. You've started off, you found something that works, then you've evolved that a little bit, evolved a little, another little bit, and it develops into, well, it's your story. In theory, from start, your story from one, the very first episode all the way up to the latest episode, your story is always continuing, and it might change again in the future. And that's what I think is the great thing about podcasting, is someone is out there and will listen to it. It might just be yourself when you're editing it, but someone is listening to it, and someone will find something out of it. They might only take a little bit out of what you've been saying, but a little tiny bit could change somebody and make someone else do something different with their podcast. Or it might inspire them to say, well, I'm going to go to this theme park, I'm going to go to this SCA event because of little things you've said. And to me, that's what I enjoy podcasting when I can. Just wish we could just do it. I say we're constricted to Halloween at the moment with this event, and we are looking at doing something else in the near future. But I just enjoy podcasting, so obviously with your podcast, where can they find you? Because that's the big thing. You might have talked about it, but will can the listeners actually find it? Because the links will be in the show notes, guys. Don't worry about that. But well, let everyone know where they can find you then.
So we're on all the major podcast apps. Apart, we are on Google Podcasts. However, for some reason, they've got our old feed and they can't change it. And I don't know why. But apparently it's going now and it's going to be on YouTube Music. So it's on YouTube Music now. But apart from that, we're on Apple, Spotify and Amazon Music and all those kind of places. In terms of social media, really, the best place for us is Instagram at the moment. That's the place where we've got into a bit of a groove with. We are on Facebook, but we don't always...
Facebook seems to be a little bit weird. Facebook seems to be a little bit funny sometimes. You can put stuff on Facebook and it appears on Instagram, but then you put stuff on Instagram and it doesn't appear on Facebook. And it's
it's a weird one. But I mean, generally speaking, we'll put stuff on Instagram and Facebook, but it always feels a bit random with Facebook. Like sometimes we'll put things on there and a lot of people see it, and sometimes we'll put stuff on there and for some reason people aren't seeing it, and I never really know. So Instagram's, and I think one of the things that I've learned is don't spread yourself too thin across social media, because I think it's almost impossible to maintain a good presence across all social media unless you've got a whole team of people doing it. So I think focusing on one
platform or a couple of platforms rather than focusing on all.
I think so. Although Twitter's quite good, and Twitter tends to be the way that we connect often. So you know, Twitter is a good or X as it is now. Yeah. I guess. So that's not a bad space.
The handles are at Theme Park Loopy, I think, on all.
Yep. So all of them is at Theme Park Loopy, and you can find us on YouTube as well. And we are planning to do more on YouTube. I've got some plans now. I've got a couple of formats worked out for the new year. And it'll be good to link up again, because it'd be good to get you on some of those. I won't quite reveal what we're planning to do, but in essence,
is this like a little sneak peek without actually giving anything away?
Because this is, well, it's an exclusive, because
that's even better.
Well, I've not even talked about this.
I've just got my title now for this episode.
that's good, but basically what the problem is with podcasting is that it's obviously an audio format mainly, or at least it is for us. Trying to translate that to YouTube has always been a challenge, because people watch YouTube, they don't listen to YouTube. So what I don't want to do is try and just turn the podcast into something visual. I want to do something else. And so what we're going to do is we're going to create a new format. One of them is going to be called the e-ticket, is what we're calling it. And effectively what that's going to be like this, it's going to be like a one-on-one conversation with someone, a specific topic, probably for like 10 minutes or so. You know, what's the worst ride at Alton Towers? What's the best ride at Alton Towers? Yeah. Like that kind of conversation. And then I'm also playing about with the idea of trying to do some sort of solo format, but I'm still kind of working on that one, so we'll see about that. But that is what we've got planned, because we need to do more on YouTube. You know, YouTube is I was reading earlier 20 billion active users or something, and it seems
YouTube's like the ocean, and everyone's a little fish in it, and the occasional little fish becomes the big fish. I've been watching some YouTubers for probably 7 or 8 years, and there's one, I don't know if you know the guy, he's up from your neck at woods, Bear Meets Food. I remember watching Adam about five six years ago when he was small pond, and now he's I'd say he's one of the biggest YouTubers growing at the moment.
I was watching one of his videos last night, actually. I watch his quite often. They're quite
entertaining, aren't they?
Quite cathartic to watch. This is an interesting point on YouTube, actually. I heard or I read somewhere that their algorithm actually makes recommendations also based on the time of day and what you like to watch at a certain time of day. And so on an evening, I like to watch his videos, and I also watch some other videos which are kind of like easy watching, but they don't pop up as recommendations in the morning, I've noticed. So it's kind of interesting, is that,
One of those. There's a lot of there's also a lot of Phil's the big big person on YouTube. I'll give him his plug, Epic Phil on YouTube, Epic Phil Vlogs. He always has to get it in somewhere. He's not even on the show, and I'm actually plugging him. He's found a little market there. He's vlogging with his Tenerife vlogs and Florida vlogs, and it's working for him. But he looks into the algorithm quite a lot, and from what I'm seeing, the algorithm changes so much. Trying to be on top of it is the hard thing. But it's a platform. It's a great platform for people to use because it's also free. You don't have to pay for them things. That's what makes podcasting more affordable now, because there is platforms out there where you don't have to pay for anything. I remember probably when just before the event, as you said before, it was you had to pay for bandwidth, and you could only have a certain amount of megabytes per episode and stuff like that. And like I said, we use it was Anchor, it's now Spotify for podcasters, and it's completely free. When we first started, they distributed everything for us, but now we're figuring out that it's not all being distributed by the distributor. We have to move it ourselves, but it's still all free, which makes things a lot simpler when you don't have to pay for stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And it's definitely better when you don't have to pay for stuff. can agree on that. And we are Northern, so...
Yeah, well, we definitely... So I think we'll call it a night, my friend. I think that was a fantastic little catch-up, and finally putting in... My camera's just died. 1 second. Just change my camera. Yeah, just change it over, so hopefully it doesn't lose anything, because it sounds weird when I'm actually podcasting. I like to actually look at myself, and you can actually see how messy the back is. That's what you don't see usually.
It's like our room,
obviously they'll be able to find you at Theme Park Loopy on Instagram X. All the links will be in the description. And thank you for coming on. Very much appreciated.
And we'll have you on over on the Theme Park Loopy podcast at some point, I'm sure. I look forward to listen. I think this will be a potential bumper episode, I think. But hopefully people like it and listen to it and enjoy it. But do come and find us at Theme Park Loopy. We kind of have a revolving cast of people, and we talk about theme parks and attractions and Halloween things as well occasionally. But you know, we'd love you to be part of the Theme Park Loopy podcast family, as well as the do we call it the HHE podcast or Halloween Horror Events podcast?
We mix and match. We say HHE or Halloween Horror Events. It's bilingual, as you say, so you can use either way. So also with that, if you have listened to this, could you on whatever podcast app you're using, if you could give us a 5-star review or follow, like, comment, follow us on all our socials at HHE podcast on Instagram, X, Facebook, TikTok, even though we don't use it. So with that, do you want the final word, Ryan?
Yeah, I'd say just be yourself, enjoy yourself. And if you're thinking of starting a podcast or thinking of starting anything, just do it and don't worry about it, and just get on with it, because you'll thank yourself for doing it. Definitely. So just get on, enjoy your life, and just do things and enjoy it.
Yeah. Cheers. And I'll just finish off with my new catchphrase that Phil says I have to keep saying. Let the scurs commence.
Let the scurs commence. I like it.